to welcome you to Kingwood. It's a great day to be here. It's a lot of exciting things I'll be sharing this morning. If you have your Bible with you, turn to Isaiah 58 with me. And we're bringing this Connect the Dots vision really not to an end, but to a beginning. And we'll be talking about how the rest of the year is going to look and what we're going to be doing. I want to start off this morning with an illustration that's I'll warn you a little bit. I'll give you a little disclaimer. It's a little bit gross, but right? Welcome. But the point of the story, I think, will make a really clear point for us this morning. There's a disease in the world that's nearly as old as mankind. It's sickened millions of people, mostly in Africa and Asia. It's called the guinea worm disease. And it's so old, its remains have been found in Egyptian mummies. So you're talking about a disease that's certainly hundreds and hundreds, maybe even a few thousands of years old. The disease is transmitted through drinking water containing the guinea worm larva. Once it's ingested, the larva can grow for as long as a year in a person's body, and it grows to the length of between 2 and 3 feet long, lives inside the body. The worm only leaves the body through an excruciating, burning blister. It's usually in the leg or the foot. So the worm sort of makes its way to the surface of the skin, and then there's a blister that pops up, and the worm's trying to make its way out of the body, and that causes an infection. The only way to ease the pain is to bathe the blister in water. When that happens, when the victim goes and bathes the blister in water, that blister opens and new eggs are released in the water and the cycle starts over again. The only way to get rid of the worm is a really ancient technique where a person, when the worm starts to come out, they'll take it and feed it around a stick and just turn the stick a little bit at a time and pull the worm out a little at a time over several days or even months. That practice is so ancient that many people think it's where we got one of our iconic medical symbols that you'll see. See the snake wrapped around a stick? People think that that's where, a lot of people think that's where that symbol came from. Now, this is a terrible and painful disease, but the good news is after hundreds and maybe even thousands of years, it's on the verge of being completely eliminated. And how would that happen? Well, thousands and hundreds of thousands of volunteers have handed out straws with cloth filters and taught villagers to avoid water sources when infected. And the results have been absolutely startling. In 1986, there were 3.5 million new cases of guinea worm disease in 21 countries. In 2012, there were only 391 cases worldwide, from 3.5 million to 391. Can you imagine the results? Guinea worm disease is poised to be the second human disease to be eradicated in world history. The first one was smallpox. Why? Now listen to this, it's very, very important. Because the people who were infected were connected to the right behaviors. Here's basically the right behavior. When you filter the water and when you keep people who are infected out of it, the disease goes away. No shots, no medicine, no vaccination. Just making the right connections. When the right connections are made, incredible things happen. That's what this series, this entire month, has been about. When the right connections are made in our spiritual lives, incredible things happen. So this month, we've basically talked so far about two different connections. This morning, we'll close on the third. The first connection we talked about is a God connection. Now, in your bulletin, we've put a little handout, little insert, little card. And on that card, it gives you some information about your own devotional life, your own prayer time. We basically said there are three important God connections that you can partner with in this church. One is daily devotions. And so inside your bulletin, we've given you a little card there to tell you you can go to YouVersion. You can go and find an online Bible, online devotionals. Great resource, great tool. We've given you some other books you can follow up with there. Here's the bottom line. Our staff wrote a devotional for us this month, and many of us have followed it every day. And how many of you have been blessed by that? Has that been a blessing? Well, here's part two. If you don't already know, what you're going to do for your devotions tomorrow, because the devotionals, today's the last day. If you don't know what you're going to do tomorrow, you're probably not going to do anything. And then the next day. And this great sense of breakthrough and connectivity to God will start to drain off out of your life if you don't do something about it. So we put that in there just to say, hey, sometime today, if you don't already know, take that card, go on YouVersion, look around, make a decision about what you're going to do tomorrow for your devotions, and keep that God connection going all year long. And so basically there's three ways. Connect to God through your devotions, through weekly worship here together with us, and then one Sunday night a month, third Sunday night a month, we have a service called Soak. And that'll keep your God connections living and strong. The second connection we talked about is group connection. And many of you have already signed up. Dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens have already signed up to be a part of a life group. And you just saw the announcement about that. If you haven't signed up for be a part of a life group yet, today is kind of the official kickoff for new life groups. And our semester really starts today, and so many of those groups will be starting later today or later this week sometime. We'll have their very first meeting. Our life group directories are available for you. If you don't have one yet, you can grab one in the foyer. Obviously, what's true there is also true on our website. You can go online, and you can get access to the directory there. You can sign up, shoot an email off to us. The site will tell you how to do it. It's very few steps, very simple. And somebody from a group will contact you and invite you to be a part of their group. So I'd like to ask you to do that. And as we break the fast today, in fact, those groups and relationships are so important to us. We've just encouraged everyone, as you break your fast at some point today, break your fast with somebody. It'll be a great joy and a great fellowship for you to share that occasion with somebody else. Many of our life groups are doing things throughout the day to break their fast with their life group. So I want to encourage you to be a part of that. Now, that brings us to our last connection, a God connection, a group connection. And then today I want to share with you for a few minutes, a go connection, a go connection. Isaiah 58, as you look at it there, let me give you the background of what was going on. And if you know the background of this chapter, then the verses I'm going to read will come alive to you. Leading up to Isaiah 58, many of the upper classes of the Jews were slaves in Babylon. The city of Jerusalem had been destroyed. The temple in Jerusalem had been destroyed. The Jewish people that were in exile had been in slavery for about 70 years. Then God raised up a deliverer in King Cyrus, the leader of the Persian Empire. He liberated the Jews, and they started the long journey back home to their own land, and even the longer journey of rebuilding. By chapter 56, the Jews had returned to their home. They had rebuilt the temple. It had been fully restored, and they were beginning to have worship services and all the things that they did in the temple. By chapter 58, the community's now facing a spiritual crisis. They had been, now imagine what had happened to them. A foreign nation had come in, captured them, taken their brightest and their best, enslaved them in exile and bondage in a foreign culture and nation for 70 years. They have been burned by outsiders. So now that they're back home, they've circled the wagons, they've shut off outsiders, and they've rallied around their own causes. And also, they had become tired of waiting on God. If you go back and read Isaiah 40 through 55, those 15 chapters, you'll see that there are these glowing prophecies and these glowing promises that God's going to do a new thing and there's going to be a great future. And it was portrayed as the beginning of a golden age, but they hadn't experienced it yet. By this time, nearly 100 years had passed, and they expected God to come to earth and set up His dominion over all the earth. And they had begun wondering if serving God was worth it. So they were going through the motions of their spiritual commitments to God. And there was this time of fasting that they were in the middle of when this word came from God to these people in Isaiah 58. Now look at Isaiah 58, 5 through 8. God's speaking to them in the middle of this fast. And He says, "Is this the kind of fast I have chosen? Only a day for a man to humble himself? Is it only for bowing one's head like a reed and for lying on sackcloth and ashes? Is that what you call a fast, a day acceptable to the Lord? Is not this the kind of fast I've chosen? To loose the chains of injustice and untie the cords of the yoke, to set the oppressed free and break every yoke? Is it not to share your food with the hungry and to provide the poor wanderer with shelter? When you see the naked, to clothe him and not turn away from your own flesh and blood? Then your light will break forth like the dawn, and your healing will quickly appear. Then your righteousness will go before you, and the glory of the Lord will be your rear guard. Now, there's a lot of good theology. There's a lot of deep things in those verses. I just want to pull out one thought amidst all the really great thoughts. The driving thought here is about fasting and justice. That's the combination God puts together in this verse. And he basically says a true fast is not just about humbling yourself and doing without and praying. It's also about how you treat the people around you. Now, isn't it a sobering thought that somehow our actions in the world and our relationship with the world affects our own spiritual welfare? Isn't that an amazing thought? Now remember, the Jews had been burned by outsiders. They got back home. They got distracted from the kind of people God wanted them to be. And they basically said, forget the outsiders. We've suffered enough. We're going to focus on us now. And we're going to pray and we're going to fast and we're going to ask God to meet our needs and to do what we think He should do and do what we need done. But when the word comes from God, He says, what are you thinking? Is this the kind of fast that I've called you to? A fast where you only focus on yourself and you only focus on your own needs and you only focus on your own burdens? Is the kind of fast that I've not called you to? The kind of fast that makes you look outside yourself to the people around you? To the people outside Christianity, outside of faith, outside of relationship with me, outside your culture, people that are different than you? And so the really driving point in this whole thought is, remember we've said, when the right connections are made, wow, incredible things happen. When a God connection is made, when a group connection is made, but a group and a God connection is incomplete in our own spiritual lives, we've got to have a go connection. We've got to have a connection where we go outside ourselves, where we unbreak the wagons and circle outside and touch other people's lives. God had freed the Jews 70 years after 70 years of slavery because of their own sin. His grace called them to respond. So when we hear this verse today, it's not a verse of condemnation, it's a verse of challenge. It's a clear definition of the mission we're on in the world. We've encountered God's grace, and we are eager to share the unconditional love that God has given to us with those around us. In this passage, God basically contrasts two different kinds of fast. He basically says, is this the kind of fast that I've chosen? In other words, you chose this kind of fast, but the question he posed to him was, is that the kind of fast that I picked? Or is it the kind of fast that you picked? And so he contrasted those two kinds of fast. They chose to go through the motions of their fast with no concern about people around them. And God basically said that he rejects that kind of fast, or as I like to think about it, half of a fast. Basically, what God was saying to them is, look, you've circled the wagons, you've shut the outsiders out, you've been burned, you've been hurt, you've been wounded, and the way you're fixing that is, you've gotten frustrated with me because I haven't answered the prayers that you thought I should by now. So the way you're fixing that, you're going through the motions, you're doing the fast, and you're not concerned about anybody but you. And basically what he's saying is, you're not going to have a fast and pull me into your agenda. The kind of fast that I've called you to is the kind that pulls you into my agenda and pulls you into my kingdom and pulls you into my mission on the earth. And so God won't bend. So he doesn't reject the interactions of fasting. He doesn't reject prayer. He doesn't reject sacrifice. He doesn't reject fasting. He doesn't reject those things. He's just saying they're incomplete. Half of fasting is humility and sacrifice and prayer. The other half is compassion for those around us. So today what I'm saying to you is, are we ending a fast or are we starting one? Well, both. We're ending the inner fast now that we can start the outer fast. We're ending one phase of the fasting so that we can go on to the other side, so that we can have a complete fast. What is the second half of the fast? The first half is humility, prayer, and sacrifice. The second part of the fast is loosing the chains of injustice, setting the oppressed free, feeding the hungry. Somebody in our church, and I don't know who, and maybe I'm glad, maybe it's better this way. Somebody in our church caught this vision. I got an email a few weeks ago from a lady that I've never met, and she didn't know how to respond except to send an email to me, and somehow she knew this event that happened with someone in our church. Look at this email that she sent me. She said, "I want to thank you, or the very special person who paid for my dinner tonight at Jim and Nick's. No one's ever did anything for me and my family like that before. All I could do is tell the Lord thank you, because that was a blessing for me. Me and my family will have to come and visit your church. You're a very special man of God. Keep preaching and teaching His Word. I know God's on His way back, and I want to be ready when He comes. Don't want to be left behind. I want to say thank you again. May God bless you and your family. Thanks, Douglas and Alicia Shelby Jr." Is that incredible? Somebody saw her and somehow their heart was moved, and they said, "You know what? Let's reach out." And that reaching out touched and blessed somebody else's life. So in your bulletin this morning, we put one of these little cards, and there's a lot more in the foyer. How can we now, we know part of the fast for us was read the devotional, sacrifice something, spend time in prayer. Now how can we spend the rest of the year in the other part of the fast? In your bulletin, there's a little card we just call kindness cards. And it says, "This is to show you that God loves you and He's closer than you think." And so I just want to commission you this morning. Just raise your right hand. I commission you to the gospel ministry in Jesus' name to go and do the works of Christ on earth. You're commissioned. You're in. You're done. You're ordained. You're blessed. Now, take a little card. Keep it in your car. Keep it with you. And when you're somewhere, God's going to touch your heart. See somebody else, pay for their... There's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of ways. Somebody behind you in the pharmacy line, in the checkout line, at the cleaners. Somebody who you see has a need in the movie theater line. Bring somebody flowers, send a note of encouragement, and drop the little card in there. There's so many simple, practical ways you can share an act of faith and kindness with somebody, and just let them know that God loves them. And so many times, that's all a person needs to know to realize that God's there. There are endless possibilities. Our relationship with God is intended to be shared, not to be held. And so, in Matthew 18 and 19 and 20, before Jesus left the earth, He looked at His disciples and He said, "Look, go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature, teaching them to obey everything I've commanded," and basically make disciples of all believers, baptizing, you know, the whole thing. The word "go," I think we've misunderstood. We think the word "go" is hold a meeting, have an event. We have this concept of what that means. Let me tell you, if you take the Greek language of the word "go" and you look at it in its original context, it means as you go. In other words, you don't have to go anywhere you're not already going. You don't have to go anywhere new. We don't have to hold an event. We don't have to hold a campaign. Those things are helpful and they show the city that we love them. But we don't have to do that to share our faith. What the Bible teaches us is everywhere we go, there are opportunities along the way to share faith. There's a powerful story that happened with someone in our church who took that thought seriously. And I want to share their story with you this morning. It's a powerful story. You'll hear both sides. A story of a person in our church named Stephen, and a story of another man named Michael. And just sit back and watch for a minute, and watch what God does when we take on His mission and we have the courage to go. Go ahead and play it.
Wow. Well, I'd say it was probably about October of 2011, and I was walking to work as I did every day, and
was driving up Highway 31 and noticed a guy walking on the side of the road, and he was dressed to the T, had, you know, pressed pants and tie and the briefcase, and I kind of thought, well, you know, I should probably stop. And for some reason, I talked myself out of it, you know, how we all go through the excuses. It was a period of weeks where every day I passed by him, and he was still walking. And I always felt impressed upon me that I should stop and at least give him a ride.
For several days, possibly weeks, he had noticed me walking on the side of the road and was having this internal debate about, do I stop and, you know, offer this guy a ride? Do I not stop? And
so finally one day I talked myself into stopping and picking him up, and stopped, and he got in the car.
Finally, he decided that he would stop and give me a ride, and explained, you know, I appeared to be harmless enough. So
I felt pretty safe about picking him up after seeing him for so many days and, you know, dressed so nice. I didn't think he was an axe murderer or anything.
I said, well, that's great. And I said, you just don't know what I might happen to have in my briefcase. And we both burst out laughing. And right at that point, I think that we made a connection.
Found out he didn't have a car, and that's why he'd been walking. He had just moved from Atlanta a few years ago, and was in kind of a bad situation, you know, personally in his life, and worked about a half mile or a mile up the road from where he lived.
He dropped me off at the office and said, look, you know, anytime I see you out there, I'll stop and give you a lift. And I said, thanks a lot. And over the next few weeks, there were several days where he stopped and drove me to the office. And
this went on for a few weeks where I would stop every day and pick him up and take him.
We would talk a little bit, not a lot of time, probably only about 3 to maybe 5 minutes before we got to my office.
And we could never get past service issues, you know, in that conversation, because there just was not enough time. So I had an idea. I thought, maybe I'll, you know, go out to dinner with him. We can, you know, get to know each other a little bit better. We ended up at a Chinese restaurant one night, but I just kept feeling impressed by God that there's something that he needs to hear from me.
There was something more to this than just someone who maybe felt bad that I was walking down the side of the road to work and was offering me a ride. So there was something about Stephen. There was this sense of peace that just, there was something about him that really jumped out at me. So
throughout dinner, we got to talking about each other's history and our lives, and I told him, you know, a little bit about where I grew up, and he told me the same. He asked me the question, why did you stop to pick me up? Why are you taking me to dinner? I don't understand.
You know, at the same time, I'm wondering, you know, I wonder what his reasons are for stopping and picking me up.
I told him about my dad's testimony, how he had overcome alcoholism with God's help, and I said, I don't know why. I don't know what God wants to do in your life. I said, but I just know God's telling me that he wants to do something.
And Stephen mentioned, he said, listen, he said, you know, I was wondering, you know, if you'd like to go to church. And I thought to myself, uh-oh, there it is, church. Okay, that's the reason. So I agreed to go.
So the next opportunity came. I picked him up for church, and he came, and
you know, I'm looking at all these people around me raising their hands and all this other stuff going, okay, and wasn't quite sure what to make out of all of that. You know.
It was kind of wide-eyed, but he said there was just something different about it.
I really felt a strong connection to the church. I looked forward to being here every Sunday. When it came time for the newcomer's lunch, Stephen said that he would go with me, and we went to the newcomer's lunch, and I had a chance to meet the pastors and some other folks that were relatively new like myself. From there, I moved on to KLA. When I was done with that, I went into the Life Streams. I now am attending a life group as well as the Monday night Bible study.
He jumped in and even started doing the parking lot serving, you know, just greeting people in the parking lot and everything, and was really trying to get plugged in. Over the period of the past year and a half, I have seen such a tremendous change in him.
The change in my life is amazing. I don't even have the words to really fully describe the changes.
It really scares me to think what would happen if I really would have talked myself out of not stopping to pick him up, because that opportunity could have been totally gone.
I'm so blessed and I'm so grateful to Stephen for having made that decision to stop and pick me up, to invest his time in a perfect stranger and to reach out to me as he did, as everyone else here at Kingwood has done. And I look around and this is my family. This is where I belong.
And here's a guy who's changed, who's plugged in and growing, and God is speaking to him and speaking through him to his son and mending relationships in his life. And it wasn't because of me. It was because I was just willing to do what God told me to do. And that to me is just so incredible.
I'm so thankful to everyone and so grateful, and am looking forward as I continue to grow and in my walk with God. And just, I can't say enough about how happy I am to be here, and everything that I've gotten out of this experience, and what I'm looking forward to as I move forward.
Michael, are you in this service, or where are you? Michael? There's Michael right there. Just kind of wave for a minute, Michael. Great to have you here today, buddy. Love you, man. Come on, welcome him. Good to have you here, Michael. We share that story with you this morning to say this is a fast. This is what Kingwood Church is about. This is why this vision is here. This is why we must do small groups. This is why we must have a group connection. This is why we must go. This is why. Because there are people out there who need to be connected to the body of Christ, both in relationship with Him and in relationship with other people. You know the simple way that Jesus summarized all the commandments. He said, love God, love your neighbors yourself. There's got to be a way to do both of those inside a church. And so this morning, as we wrap up today, I'm just going to share a few thoughts with you and ask you to make a commitment to this vision. And I want to share some exciting things with you that have happened in our church this year. And I'm going to give you a few slides in a minute. Because as we said when we talked about the Super Bowl, what you're doing here, what I'm doing here at this church, is resourcing life change. That's what we do. That's why we partner together, because we can't do it all by ourselves. And that's why we partner with missionaries all over the world, because we can't reach the world by ourselves. And so in just a few minutes, we're going to receive an offering, and I'm going to ask you to make a commitment, a monthly or a one-time gift commitment, to make this vision work. And I'm going to show you how that happens. If you're a guest today, or if you're new, I do want to say to you, we don't do this every week. One time a year, we talk about what our church's vision is, and we give folks one opportunity like this to make a commitment to it. And so I want you to not be offset by the idea, but to hear our heart. Let me give you some updated news as you prepare to think about what you could give and what you make a sacrifice to make this work. You know that our legacy fund goes to do two things. We say it every week: to lower the debt on the Legacy Center and raise the vision of the church. Let's go to the first slide. Let me show you something very exciting that has happened in the Legacy Center debt. In 2004, we started with $2.8 million. We have paid down to $2.4 million. Isn't that incredible? That's paid down $400,000. Isn't that great? That's great news. 400,000 roughly is left. So we've got to keep attacking that. Go to the next slide. At the same, in the last 3 years, we said lower the debt, raise the vision. We've raised 125,000 for vision. Now go to the next slide. Let me show you what that means, what that looks like. Some of the things we've done are parking lot renovation, Celebrate America, Servolutions, Connection, software and staffing. A lot of things that we needed to keep reaching and connecting. That's kind of what we did, and there's a lot more you could say about that, but that gives you the gist of it in a short amount of time. Now, in the next slide, what you'll see is our goal for this year. To keep reducing the debt, to keep paying the debt down, we can see the taillights, we're almost there. We're trying to gather together $70,000, and then for the vision, $60,000. Now go to the next slide, and you can see, I mean, that's a lot of detail, but you can see what the vision basically goes. Connect the dot vision basically does this. We have to make, you know, vision doesn't live until it's visual. When you heard Michael's story, you said, maybe God will use me to touch somebody. Because we meet Michael and we can see what it is like for a person's life to be changed. And I thought about Michael and I thought about other people I've met at our church like Michael, who when they first come, they kind of bounce around like a pinball trying to find what do I do now? What's my next step? And so much of our vision this year is going to be in making a visual, clear path for a person who's come to faith or come to our church on what do you need to do now. For those of us who've walked in the faith a long, long time, those may seem like no-brainers. But to people who are brand new to the faith or brand new to our church, it's not clear at all. And so we're going to redo our foyer. We're going to redo our life group rooms. Here's what happens. When you come to our church, I think you come here and you say, man, all of the energy, all the effort, all the creativity that's put into worship service, you say, man, worship service is very important to that church. But if you go to some of our classrooms, you look and you say, I don't know by looking around what's in here is as important. And all I'm saying is people who come to faith and come to our church, if they don't make a connection with other people in the long run, they don't stay. And if they don't stay, we can't disciple. We can't grow. We can't mature. We can't equip. We can't help people move in deeper places in their faith. So what we have to do is raise the value. And when you walk into a life group room, you walk over and you say, wow, this is important. This is important. Because look how easy it is to understand what happens in this room, what I'm supposed to do, what the vision here is. And so we have some work to do there. And then also in our staffing with Nathan, who's helped us with our new groups. And on and on and on. I won't share all of it this morning, but you get the general idea. Now, here's the bottom line. Here's how we can reach our goal. Go to the next slide. 130,000 basically between monthly pledges and one-time gifts. That's how we can do it. Go to the next slide. Here's what we said at the beginning of January. If we have a gift of 10,000, 2 of 5, 5 of 1, 10 of 500, that number of one-time gifts will help us reach our pledge. Now let me tell you the very good news. Go to the next slide. We've already got the $10,000 gift. Isn't that great? We've already got one of the five, we've already got three of the one, and we've already got six of the 500. So on the right-hand side, you can see, go back. The right-hand side, you can see, if we have one of five, two of one, and four of 500, we're there on one-time gifts. So we're already over half on that. Now go to the next slide. So here are the monthly pledges. You can see it. One of five, you know, it's clear, right? All right, go to the next slide. Let me tell you what we've already got. We've got 1250, 6200, 8100, 1450, 1625. On the right-hand side are the monthly pledges we need to to fulfill this need this year. So we're almost halfway there. Before we even pulled on the campus today, the leaders in this church, they heard this vision and they said, I want to be a part. I want to see this happen. And so we're already halfway there. And so today, what I want to ask you to do is, if you're a one-time gift person or a monthly gift person or both, my family's done both. And many of you may want to do that. And that's great. Maybe you say, I want to give as much as I can give today, but I also want to give every month and see this happen. See this debt come down and see this vision go up. And so our ushers are ready. If you need an offering envelope or if you need a commitment card, let me say this. If you've been given the legacy fund for a while, you say, hey, I started at 2.8 and I've been riding. Would you please fill a card out again? Here's what's going to happen. Today, we take in the offering. Tomorrow, we make decisions on what part of this vision we're going to do. And so, it's that simple. Today we receive. Tomorrow, we act. And so, if you've already made that commitment, and you say, well, I've been doing that, would you just please give us the card to let us know? You can write on it. It's not high gloss. Come on, guys. Just wave at one of our ushers if you need a card when they pass you. There's some in your bulletin. Our ushers are here and they're ready. An offering envelope or a card. If you're giving a cash offering, offering envelope. If you're giving a check, your check is your receipt, your record for today. But here's what we're asking today. If you can give, and whatever sacrificial gift you can give a gift that will cost you something because life change is worth it. Here's what our family did. Our family gave a $1,000 gift. That's a sacrifice for us. Everybody's got a different economy. Everybody can do something. Some people can do more, and a few people can do a lot. That's what we could do, and it was a sacrifice for us. We didn't follow the chart, so, you know, whatever. We could do $150 a month. We could have lowered it to $100 to fit the chart, but we said we think we can do more than that. So we did, and it's not on the chart, but I'm here to know it's okay. But it helps. So whatever you can do to give, and here's what I want you to understand. Our staff and our board are so committed to this vision, 100% of them have already made a commitment to give. 100%. So I want you to know, this is not an experiment, it's a direction. And as you give this morning, the thing I want you to remember is there are a lot of other people like Michael out there who this church has been commissioned by God to touch and to reach and to receive. Not just share the good news and move on, but like Stephen did, build a relationship, receive in the faith, and help them grow in their faith. So this morning, give your best offering, give your best gift, make your best monthly commitment, and I believe that the need of this house is going to be met. And at the same time we did all that, we grew from 60 missionaries to take it on 70. So we're reaching the county and the world, and you're doing that. So I want to thank you as your pastor for your commitment, your gift today.